You're listening to Mental Break with Brian Schrader.
Welcome to another episode of The Mental Break. I'm Brian Schrader, and this is exactly where you need to be on another episode of The Mental Break, and I appreciate your time. Let's get into some self-care, and what's going to be this week's self-care is pick up a book and read it. Find a great book. There's so many great books out there. And so many great authors, and it's a great way to distract yourself from any stressors and or, you know, just spend some great time keeping your mind active. So I'll be right back with today's episode, and tonight we're actually doing something a little different with the Mental Break. We're actually going to be going live on Facebook to do something a little different. But go ahead and think about some good books that you yourself enjoy, or maybe you're meaning to, in, you know, get more into, and I'll be right back with today's episode of The Mental Break. All right, welcome back to The Mental Break. Again, Brian Schrader here tonight, doing a live Facebook Live episode of The Mental Break for people who maybe sometimes I don't catch and also can catch the episode. This is the second installment of the Mental Break's focus on trauma, and actually going to be focusing this week on psychological trauma. For those who have checked out last week's episode, you know that there's multiple types of traumas that I'll be focusing on, beginning obviously tonight with psychological trauma. There's unresolved and secondary trauma, right? And there's a lot of components that kind of fall into these areas. So if you have a moment and you want to swing on Facebook tonight, I will be on there for a little bit while doing this episode. If not, check it out at another time. But let's get into it in terms of psychological trauma. Let's first look up what is psychological trauma. I think that's always a good way to kind of perceive in terms of understanding these types of things. So psychological trauma is the feeling of powerlessness which results from the feelings of being helpless or often exhibiting behavioral and emotional symptoms. Somebody who experiences psychological trauma may either experience a situation of thinking that their life may be ending. They may experience abuse, which is extremely powerful in nature in terms of making them feel helpless. There's a lot of different ways that somebody can experience psychological trauma. One of the diagnoses that a lot of people will probably be familiar with in terms of psychological trauma is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. All right, so post-traumatic stress disorder is a disorder in which it's a cognitive symptom, right? So what it is cognitive symptom of feeling as if you have these often have intrusive thoughts that come into play or memories of the event, again, typically derived from a prior traumatic event, right? So the idea of post-traumatic, so after the trauma occurs. Diagnosis for post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, actually clinically is not supposed to be made until at least 30 days after the traumatic event had occurred. So that's an important component to think of. So when you think of post, it truly is at least 30 days after for a true diagnosis. Again, a lot of symptomology that, you know, you may think of when you hear PTSD is intrusive thoughts, right? Or flashbacks. They're the same ideas. Nightmares, hyperarousal or hypervigilant individuals. A lot of times you may think of somebody from the military coming back from combat as somebody with PTSD. That's a very common diagnosis. However, there are also some other components to psychological trauma which I want to get into that you might not be so aware of, right? So it affects a lot of different areas. In fact, when I'm going down through the different types of traumas, whether it be psychological, unresolved, and or secondary, I'm going to look at physical effects, I'm going to look at emotional effects, and cognitive effects, right? Those are the areas I'm going to kind of focus on. And the reason for that is to help you understand that there's multiple levels of effect that trauma whether again it be any three of the types of traumas that we're going to cover over the next couple of weeks, that they affect different levels of an individual, and it's not just somebody who seems like they're on the edge or has a hard time coping. Okay, there's a lot of different components that come into that. Let's actually start with the physical effects of psychological trauma. I'm just going to list a couple of them, hypertension being one, which is a disease which includes symptoms such as rising arterial blood pressure, right, or blood pressure, changes in the heart, brain, and kidneys, as well as systolic and diastolic blood pressure, right, when you're laying down versus standing up. Hypertension is often found in hypertension is found in the raising of blood pressure. And it might not be surprising that hypertension is a physical effect from psychological trauma, in the sense that when somebody becomes, you know, increasingly aroused, right, they may sense that there's a stressor around, some type of reminder of a prior traumatic experience, and their blood pressure goes up, right? That's kind of a simplifying of somebody's experiences and why hypertension may go up, or hypertension may be an issue. It's not uncommon for blood pressure to rise with age either, so the older somebody gets, they could be developing hypertension. However, hypertension was found to be common in severe depressed individuals. Two of the largest actual risk factors for developing hypertension are the presence of anxiety and depression, which are also comorbid and, or you could say, are often related to post-traumatic stress disorder or experience of psychological trauma. The individual's personality also plays a role in hypertension, because changes in one's emotional state may lead to changes in blood pressure, bringing about negative consequences. These changes can also reduce the individual's quality of life, which makes sense, right? Because the more that they're having these issues in terms of physical symptomology, whether it be hypertension or whether it be some other symptom, it's going to affect their quality of life. So kind of moving forward, there's other things as well that I'm going to get into, such as coronary heart disease, right? This has been found to be common with individuals suffering from depression, PTSD, also been found to correlate with increased chances of having coronary heart disease, and difficulties in intimate relationships. The reason for the correlation is because anger is a common emotion expressed by those with PTSD, and when a couple argues, this can raise, you know, and or increase the blood flow and heart rate. The more severe the response of anger, the higher the chances of cardiovascular reaction, which is related to CHD or coronary heart disease, which can result into a heart attack, right? So why does it say, you know, the idea of anger, right? Because I've talked about anger a lot in different contexts when on the podcast here. Anger is a multifaceted emotion. So in other words, there's multiple parts to it. It has to at least be consisting of two emotions to come out. But anger in terms of PTSD, why that's so relevant is because a common denominator or a common issue for people struggling with PTSD is, in fact, poor emotion regulation. So when we're talking about anger, they're having a hard time regulating those emotions, which can play a part into their physiological well-being. And that's something that a lot of times people don't think about when they think about any type of trauma, any type of psychiatric disorder. They may kind of move past some of that. However, even outside of the heart, there's areas that we can focus on, such as chronic pain. Chronic pain is pain lasting more than 6 months, if we want to look at a definition of it, okay? Individuals that were reported as struggling with the most with PTSD and chronic pain were those that used avoidance as a coping mechanism, which also reduced their overall activity. Chronic pain is somewhat of an umbrella term, if you kind of want to think about it that way, in terms of describing different types of issues for pain. Fibromyalgia actually falls under the term for chronic pain. Chronic pain, again, is that umbrella term. And fibromyalgia is a chronic disorder which lasts for many years and is becoming a more and more common issue for individuals around the world. Many individuals diagnosed with fibromyalgia also are diagnosed with PTSD. Now, it's interesting because I remember a few years ago, people who were diagnosed with fibromyalgia often were thought to be kind of making it up or have some borderline traits. And when I say borderline traits, I refer to borderline personality disorder traits. You know, people who seem very manipulative, people who a lot of clinicians don't want to treat because of the negative stereotype that comes along with the population. However, the more and more research that's done has found that actually fibromyalgia is a real thing. And it definitely causes issues for the individual suffering from it. So there's a lot of things here, just kind of getting into the physical nature of psychological trauma. And I'm going to get into more of the cognitive and just continue to move forward with this intrusive memory. So right when we're thinking cognitive, we're thinking in the mind, right? So intrusive memory is also known as flashbacks. So flashbacks are when a stimulus or something reminds that individual of a trauma experience. They then, it's been said to me in sessions, these people have experienced as if they're right back in that moment, right back in that same situation, which can be very overwhelming for some people, right? So they become disconnected from the here and now, and they're time traveled back, so to speak, or warped back to the traumatic experience. So a lot of times people who experience PTSD, for example, or any traumatic experience, may be more likely to use avoidance because they feel like, hey, if I'm in my home, also sometimes people refer to their safe place as their bubble, you know, then I don't have to experience some of these symptoms. However, a lot of times these people will try to suppress those memories and train their brain to build some level of control over the intrusive thoughts. However, the issue then becomes when they interact with somebody with a similar event experience that may then, you know, create recall in the brain. If you've ever heard of that, it's when our brain is cued by some stimulus, whether it's conversation with somebody, whether it's an event, being somewhere, whatever, that then brings that event back to the forefront, which then leads to further stress. You might be able to guess it. So these are some of the issues that come up. So you can't necessarily always avoid things. Avoidance isn't always the name of the game. However, this continued level of stress that these individuals can experience can lead to suicide, which is a real major issue worldwide. It's becoming more and more common among men and women. You may have heard in the past that men are more likely to commit violent acts to end their lives and or attempt it, while women are often more likely to use poison or less aggressive acts to take their own lives. Nightmares are also a common struggle for those who struggle with, as I use the same word, right, repeatedly, with PTSD. In fact, nightmares are a major characteristic of individuals with PTSD. One of the most common reasons identified for the increased likelihood of a nightmare in trauma survivors is due to the increased arousal often experienced by the population. Experiencing nightmares has been found for some survivors to be a reason to avoid treatment in general, because they may feel if, like, I talk about it, then it's just going to bring up the thoughts. It's going to bring up these intrusive memories, and these are things I don't want to think about, so I push them deep down so that they never come out. Unfortunately, they do come out oftentimes in anxiety, depression, suicidal ideations, panic disorders. They can come out in a lot of different ways, and it may take a trained clinician to see that, hey, this is an ongoing issue. Disassociation is also common in the population of that experience psychological trauma. And what, you know, I'm talking about when I say dissociation, it refers to the change of an individual's identity along with a loss of voluntary control in terms of affecting memory, who the person is, understanding of the here and now, and other contextual factors. The individuals that frequently dissociate have been found to be more often struggling with somatoform disorders. Dissociation with traumatic experiences has been found to be linked in many cases. The overwhelming emotions tied to certain traumatic experiences may be too strong for an individual to experience in a conscious state. So they may dissociate, right? Which is when they lose grasp of the here and now. There's a lot of frightening parts to that. Emotion-wise, right? So when we're talking about how does psychological trauma affect an individual in terms of emotion, a lot of times experiencing hyperarousal, right? Having a hard time managing stimuli, or easily triggered is another way to put it. So there's a lot of stuff that can come into play there. People, again, we can talk about anxiety and depression. Again, a lot of times this comes from the act of avoiding society in general. You'll find a lot of people who are agoraphobic because of the fact that they've come to find that if I stay home or I don't go out into public, that maybe I'm in my bubble and or safe place. Again, stress levels due to the idea of poor emotion regulation can also play out in this population. So it's a lot of stuff to think about, which also can lead to substance abuse, which I'm sure we all know somebody or, you know, that has been affected in some way, shape, or form by substance abuse, which is a maladaptive and or negative coping mechanism. Interesting research that I've read recently is people who experience child abuse at a younger age are actually more likely at a younger age to begin struggling with addiction. And they also have higher relapse rates and lower success rates in treatment for substance abuse. A lot of these individuals could trace back three generations of substance use. So not only did they have no parent who was sober, they probably didn't have a grandparent that was sober, and or vice versa, even further back, right, great-grandparents, but even in terms of that, so they had an environment that they grew up in which was chaotic, parental discipline was aggressive, hostile, unpredictable, and this is what some children today, in today's society, are growing up with. So it's really no surprise that we have individuals in the schools and whatnot with some of the behaviors that we're seeing. And these are some things just to kind of think about. But what this is basically saying is psychological trauma has such an in-depth effect. And that's what I really want to hone in for people, is psychological trauma has such an in-depth effect on all areas of an individual's life. Well, even further, right? Because it affects the community. It affects families. It affects everybody to some level, which is why, you know, I'm such an advocate for really pushing and having more treatment options available in terms of substance abuse and mental health in general, because it's affecting everybody in different ways. And it's really one reason why I wanted to take a few minutes to hop on here during my podcast to just kind of push that idea that when we're hearing about things such as PTSD, we often hear about it in military context, but just think about it, okay? So a soldier comes home, has put his life on the line for our country, which I'm very grateful for. However, a lot of times there's not the appropriate treatment available, right? And or if we talk about how men and women are viewed in terms of expressing emotions in today's society, right? A lot of times in Western cultures, what do you get as a guy? You're not expected to express your emotions except for if you're happy or you're angry, right? And let's be honest, that's not going to cut it. So you have women who it's okay for them to be sad and cry, yet happy and jubilant. They're allowed to express a whole wide range of emotions. But yet you have a guy in many situations, they find themselves, and it's not necessarily that the treatment providers are saying this, but our culture in general is putting out there that, hey, if you are going to be a guy, this is how you're supposed to act. We need to open that up, and we need to be more open to guys talking about their feelings and being able to cry, for example. It may seem like a small thing, but I think culturally, a lot of families aren't set up that way. And one reason, not that you're necessarily going to have a kid or you yourself as a man is going to go out and develop PTSD, but in general, it's an area that's definitely needing change. As I see that as a therapist across the board, but it definitely plays out in psychological trauma. So going back to the thing, so you have a soldier come back from war, and they're coming into a family who, say, has say, let's go with a male soldier, has a wife and kids and all that jazz, but they are deciding that, hey, I'm not really comfortable talking about my feelings. What happened overseas is going to stay overseas. I know having grandparents, both my grandfathers, who are both deceased now, were in World War II, and they didn't really like talking about what they experienced. And they also came from a society that, and really what I think a group, when we're talking about the military at that time, that was really encouraged to not discuss it, right? What happened in the past stays in the past. And so what you have as a result of this is a lot of people that are suffering and or have suffered unnecessarily because they've been trained and or their thoughts are, well, I don't need to talk about this because it happened. Anything I say now isn't going to help. If I talk to my wife, you know, spouse, partner, whomever about it, it's not going to help anything, which is completely wrong, because what research has also showed about PTSD, psychological trauma, is that those individuals who have those healthy supports, right, and utilize those healthy supports, not only have greater relationship satisfaction, but also experience a reduction in symptomology in terms of the trauma experiences. So there's a real positive result from that. Also, these individuals will be more engaged in treatment, which can help them long-term find greater results there. So I want to thank everybody for hopping on Facebook tonight and taking a few minutes to just kind of listen to me as I do my podcast tonight and just kind of do something different. But I also hope that you got something out of this, educational, whatnot. But I thank everybody for listening. And I hope, again, if you have any questions, let me know. Throw them up on the board or whatnot, and I'll be sure to answer those. Sometimes is a crazy thing. All right. So as I start to work to end the podcast tonight, I do want to thank everybody for listening. If you have any questions, you can always hit me up at the mental break on Facebook. You can always shoot me an email at SchraderClinicalConsulting@gmail.com or send a voice message here on the Anchor app. Again, I thank everybody for checking out the podcast tonight. And again, if you are on my Facebook page or on the Mental Break page, you can always check it out. All right. So again, take care of yourself and send me any questions if you have them. I appreciate everybody taking the time tonight. Take care. I'm out.
You're listening to Mental Break with Brian Schrader.